Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another exciting episode of Discussions with Delia Farquharson. Delia is a licensed social worker and experienced life coach, dedicated to helping you achieve your goals and become your better self. She specializes in helping others identify the connections between your thoughts, feelings, and actions. Welcome, Delia.
Good evening, and thank you for joining us for another episode of Discussions with Delia. Well, it's I guess you could call it a overcast today in the Northeast in New York, and it's great to be here with you for another episode of Discussions with Delia. Remember, you can call in live on 619-639-4621. But before we get started on our topic this evening, which I think is a really important topic, let's say hello to my awesome husband, Raymond.
Yes.
Oh, you're the guest co-host still?
Still. Hi, Delia.
So, emotional aspects of chronic illnesses. You know, it's Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and I was thinking about, like, I've been seeing a lot about, what's her name? Jane
London,
right?
Mm-hmm.
She has breast cancer. She's on the front of a magazine without her wig with a bald head. She's the mother of two sets of twins. I think one is 11 and one is 8 or something like that. And she's going through this illness in a very public way. You know, this breast cancer. And it made me think about, you know, what it must be like, and she spoke a little bit about that, for the family members of people who are, you know, going through chronic illnesses, but also for the people themselves, what that feels like to be thinking about going through this and still wanting to play that role, whatever that role is that you're in the family. And then also wanting to just take care of the feelings of all these people around you, your loved ones. So, you know, I thought we could have a discussion about that, about the emotional aspect of chronic illnesses. And, you know, we've experienced that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I'll say that it's tough. You know, my brother was sick for a long time before he died. And that was just, you know, that was difficult. But you still, you know, part of you is, you can't feel sorry for yourself because you're focused on, on taking care of the sick.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the good thing is that, but not even good thing, because I feel like even though he was not fully conscious,
mm-hmm.
that he was aware
mm-hmm.
you know, of what was going on. So what say you on this topic?
Okay. October Breast Cancer Awareness Month, just my public announcement piece here. Women over 40 years old, get a mammogram. If you've never had one before, get one. Women with strong family history of breast cancer, get a mammogram. Be your doctor and follow through with
that. I have to say this, as I learned today. Only 5 to 7% of all women who develop breast cancer have a family history.
Mm. Well, I guess for those one, they're 100% of that one. You know, there'll be multiple arguments made about when is it appropriate and who should get it and so on, but I'll leave that up to individuals to make that decision. in terms of any kind of chronic illness and cancer being one that is prevalent in our society and the population that we are a part of. I think we have gone through it in two different ways. You know, so watching someone young pass away, you know, it's hard, and it's not something that someone would describe to you. He said, well, it's something you have to experience yourself to fully appreciate what's involved. And it's hard. It's harder. Different people have, I think, different takes on it. So people are able to visit that chronic ill person and then leave and go back and to their world. And, you know, it's only as real as when they are actually in the same space, maybe visiting, and then they leave it behind, as opposed to their others who are living it, breathing it 24/7. You know, and I think it happens more passively than we realize. You know, because people who are caring for ones, who their loved ones who are chronically ill, and I can tell you that I've seen it, and I think you could say the same, you know, where situations like this bring people together sometimes. You know, someone who is ill, and maybe that spouse or that sibling or whatever, you know, there is, at that point in time, you know, it calls for, you know, a reality check, so to speak. Or maybe just subconsciously, you're now caring for someone and not realizing how much you really, truly care for and love that person, you know, and then therefore it leads to that connection above and beyond that was expressed before in your life prior to that. But being around that ill person, caring for, and, you know, chronic and terminal,
right,
you know, becomes the hook. You know, chronic meaning, all right, it's long term, but you could have arthritis. You know, no one is going to be devastated with arthritis as if you're dying of some
cancer.
Terminal illness. So I think that's more in the wheelhouse of how we're looking at it, that it's not just chronic, it's also terminal. And I think those who are caring for and being a part of the highs and the lows, you know, just the same way you're terminally ill, you have end-stage renal disease, you're going to die, you know, whatever time frame that they give you.
Yeah, you have something like lupus or something like sickle cell.
Right. But some are more, you know, there in your face. Pancreatic cancer is a given, you know, as we went through. You know, there's no way out. It's a one way to nowhere. You know, so you know, you go through the highs where you're remembering the good days and you're laughing, and but in the next breath you're crying, and you know, and so on, and the wave of emotion that not only the person who is ill, but those who are closely connected, having to deal with as well.
Right, but I think chronic and terminal, not just a chronic illness, which, like you said, is an illness that's long lasting.
Mm.
But if an illness is chronic and serious or life-threatening,
right,
then it also presents an opportunity.
Absolutely.
It presents an opportunity because you can be, you know, and we've seen that, right, as in Auntie Audrey's case. We see that where people are, you know, you get to a place where you can, you know, prepare yourself to leave this physical world. And, you know, you can say your goodbyes and make your amends and like do it almost on your terms in many ways, you know, because you're preparing to die. And I think it presents an opportunity. So when we think about the emotional aspects of chronic illnesses and not just chronic, for this purpose we're talking about chronic terminal illnesses, but even with just chronic illnesses, because if someone has something that's debilitating, chronic and debilitating, if not life-threatening, then there's a certain level of helplessness and hopelessness and sadness and need that is created from
it. And you can look at the whole
range of things. Because it redefines the relationship.
Right. I mean, you can look at things like Parkinson's and Alzheimer's and all of those things. You watch the person that you know and love
disappear,
but the person is physically there, but just not able to relate and communicate and act in the same way. You know, and I think, which I think is really true of the point for me, what I take away from just the topic itself, is that those who care for the people in these situations neglect themselves, is not the primary focus, because you're focused on the person who's ill. And I think more often than not are way more affected than they realize or as they think. And I think it's it's an opportunity for people to introspect and think, all right, how? But then again, I almost feel as if they would feel as if they're cheating the person that they should be caring for if they take that moment, if they take time out.
No.
Yeah. I'm just saying, if for them to think about themselves.
Right. But I think that it has to be about balance because, you know, I'm sure it's happened. I don't know. It certainly didn't happen in our instance. But where someone who's caring for someone who's chronically ill becomes even more, you know, affected and ill than the person that the original patient.
Yeah.
Right? And so I think it's about establishing balance and understanding that when you are caring for someone, it becomes really important that you take care of yourself. Because now, you know, there's another person who's fully dependent on you being well. Not just for your own sake, but for their sake too.
But how psychologically, though, and emotionally and all that, how easy is that? How, you know, without anyone giving you guidance, and all you're really doing is just trusting your emotion, your compassion, your love, how you feel towards this person that is now ill, your loved one. It could be a very close, it could be a friend, you know, the relationship in terms of be it by blood or otherwise is not so much the question. It's just, this is someone you care enough about where you are now taking time out of your life. You've changed your life. You spend time with them. You cater them. You create a situation where you provide
right. And
assist them. You know, but how do you, you know, how easy is it to get someone to start seeing it that is not necessarily the best way to do this, bigger picture being
right. So I think that it becomes really important, one, that a support system, you know, exists or be established. Because, you know, yeah, sometimes it's really easy to just get caught up in the moment. But always, especially if the individual who's the caretaker, the caregiver, is someone who lives their life in a balanced way, then that would be a part of the consideration. That would be a part of the psychology going in. Mm-hmm. But if they're not, then hopefully they would have people around them who can kind of guide or help. But it's always really important. You know, self-care becomes a really important consideration.
Yeah, I agree. But, you know, if I close my eyes and think long enough, you know, I can, you know, like what you said, I don't remember if I dreamed it or if it was really real, but thinking of he didn't really love her enough because he stopped visiting her after visiting her for 3 weeks. He only went to visit her 3 days a week.
Right, right. But you know what, Raymond? There's no fixed way of measuring or assessing loyalty or what's enough. Wait, what's enough visitation, right? So because you could be sleeping there because you might be sleeping in a hospital room with your loved one, say if it's a spouse. But that's, and it may not be comfortable. But emotionally, you're more comforted being in that space with your loved one, even though you're not physically comfortable,
mm-hmm.
because if you were in another space, you wouldn't be able to sleep. Do you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Or it might be the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just cannot emotionally bear to see it on a constant basis. So you see that person for the daytime hours, and then you go home to sleep to do that again the next day, or whatever works.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that there's any fixed formula as to what's right or not.
No, I'm not disagreeing. I think, but I'm just saying it's the subconscious or added pressure that comes to bear where you're dealing with your loved ones and you said, you know what, I can see you from 7 o'clock in the morning to 7 o'clock at night and I'm at my best. If I go home and I eat what I, you know, what refreshes my body, I shower, I sleep, and I come back and I'm at my best self for both of us.
Right.
You know?
And how does that serve the patient, right? How does that serve the sick one?
Right, right. And, you know, I'm best if I did this every other day. I am not, whatever that is. That's not what so much what I'm saying. You know, you come to the conclusion in terms of how, and which is a good thing, you're not saying, listen, I have to go 100 miles an hour all the time, because if I do it any other way, people are going to say this, or I am going to feel guilty as if I'm not giving you my best, you know, and that weighs on you emotionally and physically and otherwise. So, and that's the other piece I'm talking about, where, you know, where you're also concerned about the perception of what others might think.
You know what,
I
think you get to a point in your life. Most people get to a point in their life. 35 and over, most people stop caring what other people think. Seriously.
I hope you're right.
You know, you just kind of stop caring. Like, at this point in my life, I really don't care what people think.
Okay.
You know, and I feel
I
feel like most people are like that. Like, they, you know, it doesn't matter what somebody's
going
to say.
I hope so.
Yeah, I feel like at some point people, you know, like there's some, I guess, there are others who, you know, they will always care what people think. And there's, you know, there's nothing to be done about that.
Mm.
It's just that they do care what people think, and that's another added burden that they have to shoulder.
Mm.
But most people, I think, most reasonable people will do what's good for them and what's good for their situation without putting into consideration what the next person is going to say. Because people are going to talk no matter what.
Right.
You know, and so it really doesn't matter. You know, because it won't change anything. If it's going to make my loved one better, well, maybe I would care. But if it's not, then I don't care.
Right. No, I'm just bringing it up and giving it air just because, you know, for whatever it's worth, for those folks, and to your point, I agree, you have to realize what's important in your life. What other people think, I think, is absolutely irrelevant and absolutely
unnecessary. But, and you know what? You're struggling with so many other emotions.
That's irrelevant.
Yeah,
you're just want people to know that they shouldn't get caught up in
right, but you struggle with so many other emotions when either you or your loved one is diagnosed with a chronic illness,
yeah.
And worse if it's a life-threatening chronic illness. There's, you know, there's the fear and
right.
There's the
absolutely.
Shock of it, and
absolutely.
There's the hopelessness and the
helplessness
of it. You know, there's so many other emotions floating around that you really don't, unless somebody's going to really be bringing comfort and care and, you know.
Be off with it.
Yeah, it's kind of like, what? Yeah, you know, why does
But just to flip it. No, I agree. I just bring it up just to make the point. But, you know, where that one who is ill and is saying, it's okay. You know, you don't have to spend this much time with me. It must be hard on you. Because they themselves, they love you too, right? And they're saying, it's okay. But you get such peace or whatever, your satisfaction in being there for the support. Could that be, you know, somewhat of an uneasy place or an uneasy...
It could
you know,
be.
You know,
but
I'm
thinking so long as that person still has their mental faculty and able to reason, that they can communicate, you know, effectively with their loved ones to say, well, this is how I feel, or this is what I'd like to see happen. And they can talk about it and arrive at a conclusion that both can agree with, you know? But more often than not, when something like that is happening, you know, the loved one, and we've seen it, is busy trying to learn as much as they can, or sometimes even the patient, if they're able to, about the illness.
Yeah.
Trying
they're
to find...
Becoming expert.
Yeah,
right?
Becoming expert in this
yeah.
illness.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah.
because again, it, yeah. it's something to do to replace that sense of helplessness and
right.
powerlessness that you feel.
Right, and we watch it happen.
Yeah, so,
we watch
you know...
it happen where, you know, you hear people talking, using terms and medications and studies and types of tests and results that is in no normal vocabulary. And it's so sad that the reason why you know these things is because.
Yeah.
You know, like when you see these little kids come on TV and they say, what's wrong with you, Miss? And she rattles off a whole long, you know, long name of something. It's like, wow.
Right. And I think, you know, as people go through, you know, chronic illness, like, you're right. Once you've learned, once you've, you know, gotten some measure of control around it, whether it's by learning about it, you know, like you say, you know, learning about these medications or learning about these terms
mm-hmm.
specific to the illness, then I think it restores some
yes.
sense of control.
It does. Because then you have, it's like,
and
I don't want to call it a common enemy, but you are now learning more about the situation
right.
together.
And you develop
yes.
a level of expertise.
Correct. Together.
Mm-hmm.
Together.
You know, you develop a level of expertise that I think brings on... But I think more than anything else, and this is, you know, which leads back to the topic for today, it's about recognizing that there are all these feelings floating around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it may be feeling fear of death or fear of losing
sure.
this someone, you know, or just fear of loss
sure.
of the life that we had or the life we might have had, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so there's a certain level of grief and mourning
absolutely.
Associated
you go through the whole
with that.
Cycle.
Yeah.
You go through the whole, you know, you're angry. You're,
right.
You know, you're
denial.
You're, right. It's not happening.
You know, so it's really important that all the feelings
yeah.
that exist in the situation be acknowledged
yeah.
and be allowed, you know,
yeah.
because that could create another situation, you know, other situations if it's not allowed to. So, you know, I think that is
yeah.
never easy.
Right. But again, you know, you brought up a topic of support groups or so on and
support
so forth.
System.
Support
yes.
system. You know, I don't know how easy it is for folks to find that support. You know, is it something that they should also seek?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, rather than just internalize, you know, you are not going to understand. It's not your so-and-so that is in that situation. So therefore, I can't, you know. So how best should they go about this? Is it, should they, you know, it will vary obviously from person to person, situation to situation, family to family. Sometimes could the support system be a part of your family?
Absolutely, I think so.
You know, where
because,
everyone is an opportunity then.
Right, because if you're going through it as an extended family or an immediate family, you know, you can be supportive of each other by, you know, being there and recognizing when somebody's having a particularly difficult time and just being supportive. And then reaching out to others, reaching out to the other experts, the doctors in the hospital, the social worker in the hospital, or whatever it is,
yeah.
to find out what other support systems exist.
Yeah.
Looking online, right? Looking online to see what kind of network exists around the particular chronic illness, I think becomes really important, you know, in terms of helping people to cope.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, that's what it's about. You know, it's how do you understand this new normal of living with a chronic illness?
Right.
And then how do you, normalize it? How do you move forward with this new normal
mm-hmm.
of, you know, whatever
mm-hmm.
it means
mm-hmm.
to be living with this chronic illness?
Mm-hmm. I think that's a good point. I mean, having seen it myself, but not just from personal experiences that you and I have had with our family members, but also being in healthcare, but obviously it's closer to home when you're dealing with your personal loved ones. You know, being able to trust and really have an open, honest conversation and lines of communication with those who are caring for your loved ones. If it's frustrating to get information, understand what's going on within the healthcare of your loved one, I think that adds so much more stress. If you really don't believe that they're being honest with you or everyone is being forthright and in the best possible way, I think it adds so much more to the actual illness itself.
I think that's a really good point.
Yeah.
And I think what I hear from that, which I think is also very important, is that understanding what's happening
right.
becomes really important, you know?
Right. Being able, because you're asking someone to navigate something when they are not exactly at
right.
their
peak.
Right.
And yeah, so just like being able to understand and to communicate, say, with doctors on
yeah.
a regular basis,
yeah.
whether it's meeting with doctors to get
right.
an update
right.
or making sure that you have your questions written down.
Correct.
So, you know, so like what you talk about tonight with your loved one, with the patient, if you don't write it down, you might forget it tomorrow because it's such an emotional time.
Sure.
So, you know,
sure.
you know, just having that kind of preparation to deal with it, I think, becomes really important.
Right. And I think those healthcare workers, physicians, nurses, anyone, you know, from housekeeping to dietary to anyone who have any connections with the patient, are not always as well at their best, you know, in terms of sometimes it's not what they say, it's how they say it and how it's taken. You're not, you know, to you everything is an opportunity. You know, being able to be where things are explained properly, you get your questions answered, you don't feel as if they're in a rush, you don't feel like you're bothering someone. They're taking the time to really share the information that they need to share. And I think your understanding, you being the caregiver, and also based on, you know, how well that your patient is, able to receive, ask questions, and be, I think it helps you emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
So put you in a better place.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't change the fact of what the diagnosis is.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what this is about. It's better understanding and having your questions asked and being said, okay, now, today I know more than I knew yesterday.
Yeah, and I think that particularly when facing a chronic illness,
mm-hmm.
you know, that being in a more sound place emotionally,
mm-hmm.
even if it doesn't help the chronic state of the illness, of the physical illness,
right.
but feeling more in control emotionally,
right.
and feeling more sound emotionally, I
yeah.
think can help.
Sure. Yeah.
You know,
it gets you to the place of, you know, that place of acceptance.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
of understanding. So, okay. I know fully well what I'm dealing with. I believe and I trust what information you have given me and shared, and I've validated with my own whatever and so
research
on and so
or
forth.
Whatever.
And what you say is true, and you have delivered it in such a way, and everyone makes me feel as if we're giving you the best care with all the information, and I don't have to fight, and I don't have to be dumping through hoops to get information. That is so critical. I think that
it's really wonderful if families facing chronic physical illness are able to understand that the emotional aspect of it, the emotions around it, is tied and connected to the physical, right? That they need to acknowledge all the feelings,
mm-hmm.
and you know, because it plays a role, and it becomes really important. So if we can put all of those things in order, which I think is probably the takeaway, is that understanding that there always will be, always is, an emotional aspect to every illness,
absolutely,
and that the emotions and the physical are just really so connected that they are one. There's not one without the other.
Right.
So taking care of the emotional part of the person and part of the family and part of the situation is really important.
Right. And I just hope that while you're going through it, you know, it's like, you know, when you're in the middle of the storm, you can't be asking someone to see the forest and the trees and so on in the middle of the storm. It's very difficult. But I'm just hoping that if anyone is ever faced with that, they can take that moment to be able to see the forest, the trees, and how best to approach it to have the best. Not necessarily, you're not necessarily going to change the long-term outcome, but how you come out
90 seconds
a better person and being able to better help your loved one and also yourself and your family to be able to move on, you know, after that crisis is over.
Yeah, I think that, you know, that's a good takeaway, is that understanding that, you know, at the end of the day, our emotional health is really critical to everything else, and it's totally connected to our physical health. So, you know, let's always have that as part of the conversation.
60 seconds.
So until next time, you know, take care of yourselves, I guess, you know, your emotional and physical health.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Discussions with Delia. Check us out on the web at discussionswithdelia.com and like our Facebook page, Discussions with Delia. Please follow me on Twitter at Discussion Delia. Thank you again for listening. Peace and blessings.